Well, we might have invented this whole seminar, actually, in the spirit of Anna Hoffman, who checks all of those boxes with great force and panache. She is the author of this wonderful book, Staging Socialist Femininity, Gender Politics and Folklore Performance in Serbia, which I'll pass around so you can have a look at. And currently she works at the Research Centre of the Slovenian Academy of Sciences and Arts in Ljubljana, and continues to do work, the most interesting work about the kind of sonic and cultural dimensions of post-Yugoslavia, I suppose, is would be the right way of putting it. And we're delighted to have her here today, partly courtesy of Royal Holloway. It would be mean of me not to acknowledge their agency in bringing you here, so thanks to them, and thank you very much for dropping by. I was going to say something else, but it escapes me. Probably the best thing to do is just have a quick whiz around the table so everyone knows who we are. Yes, I did explain to Anna that this is our half-term break, so that whilst the quantity might not be high, the quality would be extra high, actually, as a result of it being, you know, people who are seriously motivated and seriously wanting to come here and hear you. So I'm Martin Stokes, I'm the teacher of Japanese ecology here, and I'm in the department at the moment.
I'm Tom Hodgson, I also teach FM ecology here, and I'm interested in music in Pakistan and the FM ecology of Algorithms.
Hi Chris, I'm doing the NMAS musicology, FM ecology course here.
I'm Vincent, I'm also doing the same course that Chris is.
And I'm Peter, and I'm also doing the same course.
I'm Jenny. I'm doing Arts and Cultural Management Masters, and I'm doing this as ethnomusicology as an optional module.
Uh-huh. Okay. Hi, I'm Sophie. I just completed my viva and doing my corrections in ethnomusicology. I'm doing a dance drama in Northern Things from Malaysia called The Megmulung, and looking at how the performance is actually moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations. Well done. So Anna, over to you. It's very informal, as you can see, and the plan will be just to have a conversation for as long as we want, and then go over to the Students' Union bar, I think, afterwards, and just continue the conversation, or take the conversation in new and different directions, whatever suits us, but completely following your moods and energies. So over to you.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you for this invitation. I'm really glad to be here, to have an opportunity to talk to you in such a wonderful, you know, environment with this beautiful view. And basically this is also, as I also understood, that this is more informal talk and some kind of a sharing and dialogue. Somehow I also wanted to use this talk to try to rethink or to, you know, go through my material again through different lenses. There are two reasons for this. So first reason is that I'm currently working on a book manuscript of monograph on music and activism after Yugoslavia. So the main title is Sounds of Coming Socialism. So you will see why. Basically the title is a quotation of words of one of choir members. And the second is, simultaneously, we are putting together one thematic issue related to musical feelings, where we try to somehow discuss affect theory in music and sound studies from different perspectives, more or less beyond Western idea of how affect theory and how musical affect or affect mediated through music and sound is understood. So somehow, as you will see, it can be maybe schizophrenic in a sense how I combine and present to you my ethnographic material together with some theoretical reflections. Actually, I use this ethnographic material to develop more my theoretical thoughts in a certain way. but nevertheless, I'll start with small vignette just to, you know, get you a feeling also of the situation and the context I'm working in. So no, we are not left or right. We strive toward reshaping the very idea of politics. Edna, a dark-haired, 35-year-old, woman and member of the self-organized choir Praxa, responds to my question about the choir's political self-positioning. Edna and her fellow choir members just returned from the performance they delivered in support of the workers of the factory Uljanik Tesu, who have been striking over unpaid salaries. From 2012, when the government of Croatia passed the regulation about its privatization, shipyard factory Uljanik, formerly a symbol of city of Pula and one of the five biggest shipyards in Croatia, has been going through the so-called process of restructuration. This does not mean just transformation from the state ownership to the private one, but the complex political process that involves various national and local political players and interest groups competing for power while capitalizing on the Uljanik financial losses. Meanwhile, the number of workers has been gradually diminishing and their wages lowering, which has caused continuous strikes and civil protests over the several years. Protests show that so-called battle for Uljanik, that was how it was named, also in the media, is not just a struggle for saving local jobs, but also for the radically different vision of future of Pula's urban, economic, and cultural development and the lives of its citizens. So to quote one of protesters at the rally organized by Initiative for Defending of Uljanik, "We don't want Pula to be a touristic destination with a cheap labor force." So they demand taking back Uljanik and Pula from tourist lobbies and tycoons to the hands of its citizens and call for solidarity and syndicalism. Their demands prove that the privatization is a much broader social and cultural phenomenon than a simple shift of a mode of property. So I would like to play for you. I forgot this marketing part, which I have to do it. So, which is completely in discrepancy with what I will talk about, but I have to always, when I talk, say that this is my project, which is financed by the Slovenian National Research Agency. And you can also follow us on Facebook. I really didn't want to go to Twitter, to Instagram, to so if it's possible to. So this is important part of dissemination, also the results. And also the article which is coming from this project, you can read hopefully next January in the Journal of Musicology. So let's go to the... I hope it... Shall we have to turn on...
Sound.
It can be done, but it's not. Yeah, do you want to press play?
Yes.
Is it coming out at all?
What about,
this.
Maybe.
It is coming out very quietly.
Yeah, it's very.
It's really weird.
Is it
possible to get it coming out of there somehow or another?
Mm-hmm.
Possible answer might not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, basically I'll try to play for you here. Mm-hmm. Just a second. Hmm?
I can't think of anything, sorry.
The internet is quite slow here, but we can try.
Oh, I'll tell you what we...
You can get the volume thing up here, but actually, no, you can't. Did Max have these things?
Yeah.
Maybe here?
No.
Yeah.
I could get my laptop and plug it into the HDMI.
Yeah. Here is the problem that it's the internet is so slow. So it cannot. Okay, but.
How did you get on there? Just by email?
Okay.
Why don't you carry on and I'll grab my laptop.
Okay, I will. Thanks. Maybe also it can be. Okay, so the point is that this is a performance of one of these activist choirs I'm working with in front of these workers of Uljanik, who is just, you know, continuously in strike for last, let's say, more than two years. So Edna, as you will hear her there, she recollects that performance to me somehow empowering, but also very melancholic. So she said that they decided to sing two Yugoslav partisan songs, hopefully you will hear, and also several international revolutionary songs like Not Passeran, Internacionala, so that typical, I would say, global left repertoire. So workers were holding these banners. With different sounds around as well.
U ovoj tvrtci radnicima nisu isplaćene četiri zaostale plaće. Bez obzira na to, više nisu u štrajku. Krajem svibnja dobili su plaću za siječanj, tada se odustalo od izlaska na pulske ulice i prosvjeda pred hrvatskom vladom.
Bio je organiziran nekakav koncert podrške od strane...
So she's basically saying that unfortunately we are continuously singing to different workers, either for a textile factory which was privatized or this shipyard factory. So there is lots of these things going on in this, let's say, post-privatization economy in former Yugoslavia, but in the case of a city of Pula and Istria, which is in Croatia, so sea coast province of Croatia. So, but somehow she also said to me after this moment, when we talk about, that that basically also when workers heard how they are singing these songs, some of these songs they recognized, some of them they didn't recognize. So it happened that when one Italian song, they started singing one Italian song, Se Benciamo Samodone, atmosphere completely changed. So she said that one of the female workers, she's not understanding the lyrics of the song and asking a colleague to translate, to explain what is the song about. And then when he explained what it is, she started crying. So her face completely fell and she started crying. But this basically triggered some kind of a, you know, avalanche of different emotions, so that all workers started and all choir members also started crying. They started crying by one, and basically performance ended with intimate moment of sharing, as she said. So workers and choir members starting hugging each other. So and somehow not just Edna but other choir members also later on said to me that it was for them very emotional moment, also for some kind of expressing shared vulnerability, and basically somehow the moment that they are in the same situation, and what can they do that just can, you know, cry and be together at that moment. So basically, what they said that for them, it was also a powerful moment of sharing that kind of a shared disappointment. So Edna and her fellow choir members are just one of several choirs in the area of former Yugoslavia. They're from 2008, as you will see, even started before in 2000 first choir, but from 2008 and global economic crisis started to perform in very different occasions. So I will show some of them also visually, so you can see them. So this is a choir combinat from Ljubljana. It's a female choir also, as these Praxa choir from Pula, Istria, you just saw. So you see them in the partisan fighters, anti-fascist resistance fighters in former Yugoslavia, dressing these costumes. And also, this is a cover of their CD they published in 2013, immediately after the first biggest protest in Slovenia, anti-governmental protest. So these are Lesbor. This is feminist lesbian choir from Zagreb, Croatia. So now we are going from Slovenia top down to all these former. I don't use the map. Just you can imagine these people anywhere, not necessarily there. So this is 29th of November from Vienna. It's a mixed choir. So these two choirs are founded in 2006 and 2009. So Raspan is Skopjani from Skopje, Macedonia. They are not active, unfortunately, anymore. People, most of their people emigrated from Macedonia. Horkestar from Belgrade. This is the oldest choir. So they started singing in 2000, immediately after the fall of Milošević regime in Serbia. And these are two, now you will see four new, relatively new choirs. So first is Borke, also feminist choir from Ljubljana from 2014. Then Cooperative Praxa, that's the choir you saw at the beginning, also 2014. Host Guests, 2016, and our song from Belgrade, 2016. So basically we can talk about certain activist choral movements. So it's not just one or two choirs, it's several of them. And what is very interesting is that they meet, they organize joint festivals, they have joint public rehearsals, protests, so they meet each other, they share repertoire, they share even members. If someone moves from one city to another, usually that person also joins the choir. So, but what is also important that they use collective singing to reflect, cope with, and oppose to the structural conditions of political instability, economic precarity, and social disintegration currently ongoing in the area of former Yugoslavia. So, probably you know, but just to repeat that contextual thing. So, after the dissolution of the country in 1991, followed by the ethnic wars, restoration of capitalism, and aggressive introduction of neoliberal economic reforms after 2000, post-Yugoslav societies have been in the ongoing crisis of political, economic instability and structural problems, which in different scales also intensified from 2008. So several, let's say, scholars from, you know, anthropology, philosophy, public thinkers call these condition post-socialist neoliberalism that basically has marked this period from 2000 onward, which produced not just that feelings of uncertainty and fragility. We also talked today about these feelings of fragility current in this society here. But, you know, you can imagine after these, you know, collapse of socialism and breaking up of the country, very bloody ethnic war, and then how I usually say, like, one utopia collapsed, socialist utopia collapsed, and then you have after 2000 expecting some bright future to come, and then you have capitalism also collapsed when you see that basically capitalism was brought by privatization, not just of factories and, you know, resources, but also diminishing worker rights, you know, schooling, health, maternity leave. So it was basically perceived as ruining infrastructure which it's supposed to bring. So instead of building or helping infrastructure to be built, at least, and this is why, although also in the case of choirs, socialist infrastructure was seen as the only, or let's say socialist past, was seen as the only alternative to these, or dying socialist infrastructure was seen as alternative to these new apathy and completely social and political and cultural disintegration. So it's also talk about more about expectations. So people expected so much from what will be after, but and it also proved that these narratives of, you know, bringing democracy and capitalism and free market do not always come together. So that's kind of a story which was also sold to this part of Europe proved to be completely different in practice. So this is why in the title of this talk is political exhaustion. So as I said, it's not just structural feeling of uncertainty, fragility, but also feeling of apathy, exhaustion, and impotence, particularly in relation to political agency. So writing about this complete lack of politics in common interest in the region, post-Yugoslav intellectual Boris Budin asserts a general feeling of inability of people to intervene in politics. So in his words, he said that people simply feel excluded from decision-making and somehow feel completely at the mercy of party elites in combination with the global capital. So somehow, also Jessica Greenberg, an anthropologist, she develops a concept of politics of disappointment for people, awareness of contingency of political agency in the region. So, and I, working with these choirs, somehow I try to see them as a kind of response and call for new practices of self-care, solidarity, even some type of action. So how we can somehow escape or go away of this political exhaustion. So as you already heard, so they do that by reactualizing the music legacy of Yugoslav anti-fascist resistance as the most potent framework for articulating this response. So, of course, it's important also to say that these are not some isolated cases, that choirs just, you know, simply exist themselves, and that they are, of course, part of wider movement of new progressive left in the Balkans, so they are not necessarily associated closely with them, but sometimes they are. So it depends on every particular choir. So I also have to say that all these are really laboratories and organisms by themselves. So every really deserves of them particular attention. And it's not just because of the context of Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia, Serbia, and so on, but also because of these relations to other actors in the society. So some of them were founded by some civil organizations. Some of them really want to be completely away for any either civil sector of one side or political party on the other side, seeing these two forms of political engagement both as corrupted. So they want to somehow be beyond that. Of course, it's not always possible. So during their activities, they're often, you know, often in a relation to these structures. Sometimes they try to be or succeed in being away. So it's interesting how they navigate to this. What is also important, is the they call themselves activist / anti-fascist / self-organized choirs. So it's also important that idea of self-organization. So this is exactly what I say, how they see themselves and their internal structures also as a kind of response to already given political structures to act. So if political parties are dysfunctional, they cannot do anything, either sell everything we have, or we have NGO sector, which is very often professionalized also and Western foreign funded, also, you know, having some other agendas. They try somehow to keep that self-management and self-organization simultaneously, recalling anti-fascist self-organization of anti-fascist movement during Yugoslavia, but also recalling socialist self-managed, particularly Yugoslav self-management, which is a long other story about self-management in Yugoslavia, but it's also very important in revival of these ideas and values in a current moment. Okay, so also just a little bit more about them. So as you see, these are, you know, people more or less younger generation, but also people of different generation participate in their activities. So also coming from different family, social and cultural backgrounds. But since more or less they are students or unemployed people, this is also another chapter of the book about politicization of leisure and who can really participate in these activities and how. But just to return to that, so they already organized three festivals called All in One Voice in 2010, 13 and 18. So they try to regularly meet. And why they say why singing? So as one member of Les Bor said, Jelena, singing in a choir, especially in public space, gives you the opportunity to be spontaneous, to react swiftly, to mobilize in different ways, something that other forms of activism don't offer. So very often they also said that you don't have to always announce if you want to sing. You know, it's not like you're organizing a bigger protest, so you can be more mobile and you can do other things in public space. So this is another one of the also reason why they choose to do that. So what is also important that they also see themselves as that critical voice to common post-Yugoslav reality, particularly through employing and to reviving this cultural memory on anti-fascism and socialism as important legacy, which were not just lost because of wild evil neoliberalism introduced in this part of Europe, but also because of the very important processes of revisionism of this historical past in this region after the breakup of Yugoslavia. So it was not just that these songs were not appropriate anymore because they have some particular values of calling socialism, but it was also related to these who are good and who are bad guys during the Second World War. So partisans and anti-fascism in this part of Europe was somehow demonized as, communist criminals, even criminalized in the 90s, while collaborationists or people, forces who were actually very closely to occupy forces or Nazi forces were somehow suddenly related to national ethnic pride. They actually fought for national, all these new nation states, and partisans were, of course, communists, which wanted to destroy national identity and so on. So this is another important layer, historical layer to these sounds, why these sounds are associated so with communism and another with common Yugoslav identity. This is another also very important thing. So when they come together, it's also important because it's not some kind of a discourse of reconciliation and happy people singing together, but it's basically a very critical approach to what happened to these people who didn't want to identify with these new ethnic states, who wanted to stay either be Yugoslav or be associated with different identities. Okay, so now kind of a schizophrenic back to a little bit to theory. So how I see and how these people actually see performances of these song and songs and why they are important, or maybe I will continue and then I will go to theory. So they resound partisan songs, yeah, in different settings. So as you already saw, so in front of privatized factories, fired workers or evicted families in gentrified city outskirts, in front of neglected monuments of Second World War, in front of, commemorations, informal or formal, to also related to the Second World War and anti-fascist movement. But also at festivals, some kind of a poetry meetings, they do flash mobs, public rehearsals in main city squares. So they really perform in different, they do concerts also, as I said, two festivals, and so they also do some stage performances. So in that sense, they somehow perform in different contexts across from Yugoslavia. But what is important for all of them, since I wanted to focus on particular choir, particular people, go to more individual approach, but that I am I decided to go more general in order to develop some, try to develop some theoretical thoughts. So they all claim that they want to revive a primary function of these songs. So these are their words. To invite people to resist and to mobilize in the extreme historical circumstances. So the idea is that they said that these songs were born in the moment of resistance, of fight, of revolutions. It depends on the repertoire, of course. But they somehow want to see them as very... some kind of objects that can transmit the structural feelings of this particular context. These songs were either conceived or seen as the most usually performed, most often performed. So in reclaiming their political potential, apart what I said, these are sounds of communist past and Yugoslav identity, so this is also very important. But apart from that, they said that these songs revive narratives associated with some moments in history which are and values and human and moral values associated with these moments in history which they perceived lack in the current moment. So I also have some quotation of Thea from Combinat. She said, like, the reason why we started performing songs of resistance is actually very simple. These are the songs that transmit values of solidarity, friendship, courage, freedom, empathy. We emphasize this is still possible, even at a time when people are more and more convinced that they cannot do anything, even not even complain. So in this very low, low level of idea of any political engagement, this song somehow for them is bringing, they would say, also new energy, and I would say some kind of a new affective rapture, sensorial rapture in this political atmosphere structured by apathy and exhaustion. So furthermore, they said that these songs are a wake-up call for people to start thinking, to start taking their political destiny back into their own hands and to openly express disagreement, not be passive bystanders. So this is another aspect. So, and they narrate that inherent mobilizatory potential as really the most powerful feature of these songs. Then we can discuss all of what that sonically means in the next. But more or less it's, you know, very simple, rhythmic, recitative way of singing also, which is very loud. I have a whole chapter of singing out of tune and loudness, and you know, they're not trained, they're very in untrained voice. Even I try to claim some kind of a radical role of radical amateurism, so people who try to give some collective mass voice. I'll try to also to do a little bit here later on. So but in generally they express that strong feeling they have when they sing that song. So it's not just meaning, but it's very important how they mobilize their body. So very, and they narrate that experience of singing these songs very in embodied manner. So as Alexander from 29 of November said, from just let's sing, we started this, started for the first, when the first they sing together, they started experiencing how powerful these songs are, how deeply they touched us. I mean, our body, bodies shattered. So it was such a powerful experience. So it's, and it's typical trope also in audience reception. So either audience said, I cannot say how I feel. I'm completely fell apart, or I cannot stop crying, or I feel all these, my hair is going. So it's all about this, how I enter into affect theory 8 years ago. It was exactly through that. They were repeating, like, energy. These songs have such a strong energy. So it's all about that circulation of energy, a circulation of some shared feeling of we are somehow embodiedly live. And I think that idea of being live is also very prominent in this context. So I will go further. So they also say that singing of partisan song is full of high energy, passion, emotion, and bodily investment. So they also say that you cannot sing these songs like No, stajte vi zemlja shon. No, you have to sing that in a particular way, in a particular stance, and this is the only... And there is another whole chapter how when you sing too often that affectiveness and affective power is sometimes less and it depends on the audience reception. So it's very ethnographically very rich how this experience of affect is going on, how the transmission of affect is going on. But in general, this is the most powerful aspect. Another powerful aspect of this is exactly in these songs seen as a mass songs, not just in the sense of genre of mass song, which was also very prominent during the Second World War by intellectuals who considered partisan revolutionary workers and all songs performed within a fight to be a mass song related to socialist revolution. So these are songs from Yugoslav socialist revolution. And they being perceived as a voice of masses and were attached particular ability to articulate collective feelings, experiences, desires of working masses. So it was this was the discourse about these songs in the very moment these were sing and after the Second World War. So this is a Nikola Herzigonja, he was a partisan himself and also composer and a collector of partisan songs. He said he's one of the biggest collection of partisan songs, which was published in 1962, like musical sound of spontaneous, intimate and direct poetic realization of the most intimate feelings of a human individual, which is an integral and inseparable part of the masses, of people's collectives and their battle. So it is narrative about this importance of that mass voice. So these songs cannot exist as a single, through a single voice. It should be a collective voice. And why it should be untrained voice, this is, now we don't have so much time, but this is how I also try to theorize these amateur performance. You will basically now hear another choir and how they perform one of these songs. So, but the whole idea of the voice of masses immersed to speak for themselves. So very often they said, we are not choir for people, we are choir of people. So that's kind of a more or less typical trope of a choir. But on the other hand, it's very important because it related to this idea of mass politics, so revolutionary moment of mass mobilization of working people. So not just any people and we are voice of, yeah. So sometimes they even say like a choral mass. So this is important. And the third point, which is important for why these songs, also during the Second World War and during the anti-fascist resistance, these songs were seen also as songs of a new life. This is, of course, among the discourse of socialist revolution, building a new man, new woman, new child, new social relations. But it's, again, idea of new life. So kind of a bringing life, something new will happen, some imagining the future. So we are looking at the future when new life is coming. And when we are new life, let's see one, hear one song about a new life is arriving. You can hear its steps. So this is the... these strophe here, but let's try to. We didn't solve it. I forgot it. Yeah. So this is one of the songs, and this song is performed by this choir, Our Song from Belgrade. They are very young. Like, this is their third year of singing together. But they really practice that very open approach, so anyone can join in any moment. So I went once to the rehearsal. It was, you know, three people there, and we were singing together. And yeah, so it's really kind of an ongoing rehearsal, idea of ongoing rehearsal. So never it's completed performance. We will just sing. While we are waiting for the internet, just to go back to this idea of new life. And it was also lots of reflection then on the social media about in general, about the lifeless, idea of lifeless people and why some of these protests when or some of these singing practices were commented like, is it true that there is still some spark of life here? So it's that idea, if it's true that someone is here still able to, you know, go public and sing and, yeah. Uh-huh. So just to have the lyrics if you want. I will just wait a little bit for this. Do you have any questions or do you want to hear more or less?
That's,
I mean, I
listened to the song and
yeah,
very interested in what.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I have more to say, but yeah. This is, yeah, yeah, this is just if you have now something. This is Srđan. Srđan is here. He's he's a conductor.
Yeah, of course, I can tell by that. His immense size, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so then I will just now go more to theoretical part of this. I actually skip. So the choir's engagement with this repertoire is certainly not one-sided undertaking, and it's very complex, and it's a matter of, you know, how they and why they choose particular songs and in general how they use the past as experimenting with some new ideas of political engagement. So this is another big story, but it's what is very important is that and what I can say, what can be potentially be problematic. So they refer to partisan songs as that sonic artifacts which carrying an effective power in mobilizing people. So often these are some objects which are how they interpret it. They are traveling from moment to moment, and they said that they emerge when we need them. So it's kind of a subject-object situation. So they are objects, songs, but they are simultaneously also subjects because they choose when we need them, and then they come, and then we perform them. So it's some kind of a dehistoricizing approach to this repertoire. So simultaneously they are associated with particular historical past, but simultaneously they are going over this, so they can travel, especially if we see that this is not just Yugoslav partisan songs, but as I said, international repertoire. So in doing that, they also avoid any kind of ambiguities or negative values associated with this repertoire and present it somehow as clean from the historical and social political appropriation by different groups and individuals, also particularly after Second World War in former Yugoslavia. So somehow they want to see them as morally unblemished, something which can be used beyond concrete occasions, concrete contexts they were performed. So that attempt to temporarily transcend concrete historical experience is through this awakening these structural feelings attached to the notions of revolution, resistance, new life, mobilization. But somehow, exactly this approach was criticized by intellectuals and scholars and public, you know, people in the area. So they call it in different ways, but I will quote one. Like romanticized view is criticized as depoliticization, dehistoricization, which, to use that word of one cultural studies and sociology scholar and colleague of mine, very good colleague Mitja Velikonja, makes it easier to commodify the legacy of Yugoslav anti-fascist resistance. So that, like, it can be easily commodified because it's so deconstructualized, so it can be anything. On the other hand, some critical voices even claim that these choirs are alternative urban pop revolutionaries, hipsters. They care much more about their self-representation than really about effects or their activities. They also say that they cannot usually mobilize social strata that they sing about. So that they can sing about workers, they can sing about different marginalized group of people, individuals, but somehow how many of these workers are in these choirs, actually. So they were somehow already discredited or criticized for these things, which of course they are completely aware of. So they are not something they don't know. So it's they are very also involved in this self critique and understanding what they are doing and how they are doing. So somehow I think that these stances I just presented are basically embrace exactly that impossibility to think political beyond consistent efforts to discuss the political effects. So some outcome, how they will do, did they make some change? Very social change. They just sing and they go home and we all go home and nothing change. So these, I would say, obsession with effect and outcome and political change and what, you know, how we understand political engagement and outcome of political engagement. So I think where these affective politics can stand, actually, and why this romance is in, with affect is important, although we can also discuss from different perspectives, but why it, this concrete case is important. Because if keeping these focused on effects, or effect or producing social change somehow keep us in unproductively positions of either think of practice of resistance as a break of co-option with the dominant order. So it's always going between these two when we check how this is now, they are co-opting with the system and the second. So basically somehow don't help us to uncover the modalities of living that are simultaneously inscribed in the dominant order but also still resisting. So which is basically most of the case in these situations. And what ethnography also said. So I believe that this is also call for thinking beyond of political engagement beyond the canon of social change, which is particularly important in the current neoliberal moment where we don't have a clear division between suppressed subject and oppressive system. So basically I will use Jacques Rancière, said that political foreclosure is inscribed in an act of critique or resistance to the existing structures of power by using that same structures we seek to oppose. So in that sense, leaving the power relations unharmed. So he also then further goes on saying that in the global neoliberal condition, we cannot distinguish subversion for the operation of the system itself and artistic or art that strives to be engaged risks becoming a parody of the subversion it stands for. So all about this very ambiguous realm of political. So it's not that these people have very, you know, like government or, you know, capitalism as such, being as an enemy, as they are completely aware that they are also reproducing the same capitalism they want to just by their, you know, way of living, by just their live. So in that sense, I think, and this is why I do see these choirs recalling of affective potential of these partisan songs through mass performance, not necessarily as a cultivating new political agency or imagining new future. Of course, they sing about utopian realities and some future better social relations, as I said also. But this is not necessary that they act in order to stimulate social change. In this climate of political exhaustion and fragility, all new potential forms of cooperation, organization, are not basically possible. So everything you try new party, is already, somehow already part of the existing system. So if they create an environment, I would say also some kind of a sonic infrastructure for people who are still able to sustain life, to sustain, to be, that to give that life, that there is still something, someone there. So instead of produce some change, they sustain a life. And I have a whole chapter about the politics of leisure and how these people basically are aware that they sing about workers, but then they go home and work 6 days per week, much more than 10 hours. So they sing about 8 hours of work and wages and, what people, these people, these songs are struggling for, but they cannot do their own lives. So they somehow co-opt with the system, especially in the case of single moms or, people who don't have choice. And this is basically these political subjects are not pretend to be free or pretend to be, we can choose now to be. Of course, some of them can choose and have enough time to sing. I stopped singing. I didn't have time to continue. But still, they're not pretend to have that agency, that they will change something. But so in that sense, I would say that they are nothing more or nothing less but a condition, a resource or ethos, a form of infrastructure that is placed between the intersection between the bare survival and action, activity, passivity, possibility, and impossibility. And that all.